Yeah, another thing that we were looking at kind of with the SEC too was the potential for in-kind create redeem and maybe staking in some of the ETFs. We've seen a couple filings for in-kind create redeem. David, I'd actually like to get your take on the in-kind create redeem process and kind of what some of the advantages are to that and what your steps you're taking to kind of prepare.
It's interesting that, you know, we're used to an ETF ecosystem where you have very clean lanes of, okay, these are the authorized participants who are the ones who have historically done the creations, redemptions, and they are the ones who buy stocks and they buy bonds. You have exchanges where, you know, the ETFs are bought and sold, as well as where the underlying securities are bought and sold, electronic, you know, fixed income platforms where, you know, there's a little bit of liquidity where you can buy and sell bonds. And now, you know, this whole crypto ecosystem is kind of like trying to like fit into where that world has already existed, to your point. Okay, so the initial ETFs that launched for first Bitcoin and then Ethereum, we were not allowed to do in-kind exchanges. That's always the cleanest preference and something that's worked very nicely for equities and now bonds over time. So we solved for it. You know, it just meant there was some additional processing that had to get contemplated where authorized participants gave cash. That cash was brought over to coin brokers, which was a bit of a new entry into sort of call it the ETF ecosystem. And then they would go buy the coins on behalf of the fund, and the price ended up being wherever the usually in related to the reference rate. So for us, the CF benchmark New York variant. In kind is going to, it's not going to be that different operationally. Now we're just kind of removing that extra step of having to have cash flow to us, go back to the coin broker, go back, you know, it kind of gets to the same place, but it's operationally just much cleaner. Yeah. You know, the actual exchange is this, hey, buy or sell Bitcoins or Ethereum in kind and get ETF units in exchange. So it's not surprising that that's now being revisited, to your point. Staking as well. We're starting to see those filings and working through it. Once again, it's something that we've contemplated within the ETF world for a while, where there's either, you know, corporate actions of stocks or corporate actions of, you know, paying out dividends or stock dividends. Like these are things that have been contemplated with ETFs for even decades now. And so it's just a matter of saying, okay, here's how the corporate action of a staking infrastructure might work, and then we can just apply that to the, you know, to the ETF arena. So it's you know, we're starting to see that as well. It makes sense given that, you know, a lot of these cryptocurrencies, and Roger, you can speak to this better than I can in terms of why staking is so important and how that's part of the ecosystem. But it wouldn't shock me if that starts evolving as well.
I'd love to jump in there because I think essentially what the SEC and all the conversations that we at Franklin Templeton have had with the SEC over the years on digital asset related things or blockchain ecosystem is all centered around, is this better for the savers? Is there something that we're doing to bolster the system in the long term for the savers themselves, you know? And in this context about staking is a hugely important part of the return stream for savers. And to the extent that the ETFs don't currently offer it, then you're kind of getting proof of stake network minus, you know, the staking return. And I think it behooves everybody to get to a solution where the savers can benefit from owning a portion of the network and all of the future opportunities that sit in front of these networks, then also can earn the staking reward for having their assets deployed here as well. So I think that's a framework that I think the SEC will begin to understand, not about, you know, putting they always have their hat on what helps and benefits the savers. And I think that's, as long as that's the theme, I think we'll get to a place where staking will be approved inside of the ETFs.
You're listening to CFB Talks Digital Assets, the home of informed conversation about crypto for institutions building the future of finance, presented by CF Benchmarks.
Hey everybody, thanks for joining us for another episode of CFB Talks Digital Assets. I'm Ken O'Gallagher, Head of Content, and I'm joined as usual by my colleagues, Gabe Selby, who's our Head of Research, and Mark Polipchuk, who's a Research Analyst. Today, we are honored and frankly stoked to be joined by two guests from Franklin Templeton, Roger Baisden, who is Executive Vice President, Head of Digital Assets, and David Mann, Senior Vice President, Head of Product and Capital Markets, Global ETFs. So, gentlemen, thank you very, very much indeed for joining us.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
The reason why, obviously, David and Roger are with us is because they have just launched the Franklin Crypto Index ETF, NASDAQ ticker, EZPZ, or EZPZ, as we like to say here. Now, this provides a combined exposure to Bitcoin and Ether by tracking the CF Institutional Digital Asset Index, which is a capitalization-weighted benchmark portfolio index calculated and administered by CF Benchmarks, of course. So, Roger and David, I think, you know, major congratulations are in order to begin with. Well done for getting this over the line.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
So clearly we're going to talk about EZPZ, but what some of you may not know, or I guess some of you will know, is that Franklin Templeton is in fact one of the TradFi institutions with the longest standing and largest footprint in digital assets, largely via the Franklin On-Chain US Government Money Fund, which is a tokenized money market fund, ticker FOBX, which was actually listed in 2021. And, you know, each share is called a Benji, and it represents one share of, obviously, FOBX. So, plus Roger and David, of course, have decades of combined institutional investment expertise at the highest level, including several years of combined expertise in digital assets, trying to bridge that gap between TradFi and digital assets. And they've graciously said that they're happy to share some of their insights. So we'll get into that as well. So maybe, Roger, the best place to start, I guess, is that the fact is, Franklin Templeton launched a Bitcoin ETF in January 2024, along with a raft of others, as well as launching an Ether ETF later on that year. I think it was July 2024. So I guess one major question, which I'd love to give you the opportunity to answer, is what problem are you trying to solve for investors that they cannot solve by simply purchasing your Bitcoin and Ether ETF to actually create the same exposure?
Great question, Ken. Thank you for teeing that up. Look, we're trying to make crypto investing easy peasy. We think the story of 2025 isn't about single asset exposures, but about diversification. We've been able to partner with CF Benchmarks on creating a path where we can have, you know, as the regulators approve assets coming into the ETF format, a widely diversified, low-cost exposure into these important capital markets, because we do think that the crypto markets are capital markets. And as an extension, the kind of the blockchain network and protocol investing opportunity set that, you know, we think is going to be an important part of investors' portfolios, large or small, depending on what your customized needs are. But, you know, poised toward the future. We've been building inside of blockchains, as you pointed out, with Benji for a period of time, and everything we've done for 78 years is offer advice. This is a natural extension, low cost, diversified exposure across the an exciting new asset class. So we're really happy to bring in to make crypto easy peasy, quite frankly.
Yeah, well, I just want to give a quick shout out to whoever is responsible, whoever the person is at Franklin Templeton that comes up with these tickers, because they've so far been pretty brilliant. Mm-hmm. And those catchphrases that you just used, I think it really does sound pretty cool. But I just wanted to ask, you know, David, his take on, let's go back to EZBC, right? So the Bitcoin fund, which kind of started this whole ETF movement off with Franklin Templeton. How has the reception been so far with advisors, with the folks that you work with? I think, you know, looking at some 13F data, we can kind of point to it and say that this fund has kind of a higher percentage allocated by investment advisors, whereas, you know, other Bitcoin ETFs have been kind of more of a hedge fund darling vehicle. And certainly Franklin Templeton's seems to be kind of used in kind of the traditional sense that, okay, this is an ETF, it's a beta exposure product, and it allows investors to get, you know, pure Bitcoin exposure in a very clean, manageable fashion that's regulated. I just kind of want to get your take on that.
Sure. And thanks again for having us. So, and maybe this kind of dovetails, Ken, with your question about sort of the why ETF. So, you know, if I kind of like build at the beginning point, and this is maybe now going back a couple of years, was, you know, there's no doubt investors have gravitated towards the ETF vehicle or wrapper, you know, as you want to say. And I think last year there was, once again, over $1 trillion into ETF. So there was a general desire to bring initially Bitcoin, but more broadly in this, you know, hopefully much more to come, these cryptocurrencies, digital assets into the ETF vehicle, whether it's investors that are advisors, whether it's model portfolios, whether it's just, you know, portfolio construction. There was this new asset class that now all of a sudden we're trying to build into this, what I'll call the vehicle of choice. So a lot of time now, I guess, 2023, understanding the nuances in particular to cryptocurrencies, understanding the new actors that maybe weren't quite into the ETF creation redemption infrastructure. But that was, you know, a lot of time working with regulators, working with the ecosystem, got those products up and running last year. And then it became a, well, why do you want Franklin Templeton to help bring my exposure to Bitcoin or Ethereum and now the crypto index? And that's sort of now the, okay, all the ETF parts and then Roger's digital asset part and the things about research and, you know, running nodes and the experience with Benji to be able to have opinions about all of these cryptocurrencies. We think that was a very powerful message to advisors, to RIAs, to say, hey, this is why we think among several options within the Bitcoin and then eventually Ethereum space, here's why you should be using the Franklin Templeton ETF offerings. We think that will just continue now with the broader index offering.
Yeah. And one thing that's great about the EZPZ ETF is the underlying index. We're using the CF IDAX, which, although it's currently just Bitcoin and Ether, we've seen recently like a flurry of filings, Solana, Litecoin, XRP. As these things get approved, the IDAX will add these constituents to the index, and then that will make its way into the EZPZ fund. So David, could you just tell us a little bit about the mechanics of the rebalance and how that will look for investors as time goes on?
Yeah, it's funny. When, you know, we get asked, well, what coins are you, Franklin, going to add to your ETF when, Mark, as you said it correctly, we are very reactive to the benchmark. You know, our job is to track the CF benchmark digital index. And so as, not to oversimplify the methodology, but as new coins become approved from a regulatory perspective, we will, you know, they'll become part of the index and our fund will add them to our ETF as soon as is possible, such that we are tracking the index as tightly as possible. So absolutely right. There's a bit of, you know, very symbiotic where, yes, as you're adding, we will add as quickly as possible. But, you know, over time, you know, we should own multiple coins as per they're allowing from the regulators.
So that actually speaks to an important point that overlays this entire piece, actually, guys. The question is then, because there are clearly multiple ways you could have done this, having made the decision that you're going to, number one, enter the space, number two, perhaps go beyond Bitcoin and Ether. There are a number of ways to do that. And we can clearly see that some other players are actually going the alternative routes. So what is it, therefore, I would ask, about IDAX, or maybe I would say maybe the CF benchmarks methodology or methodological approach in general that attracted you? Because as you say, having done so, having been attracted to it, now in a way you do need to be reactive. You know, you need to react to what changes happen in the methodology that bring in additional assets based on a certain number of, you know, several criteria, of course. What was your thinking that sort of like motivated you to go that route?
Yeah, sure. So I guess a couple parts. One is, and this, you know, part of the, what makes this somewhat challenging is sort of the unknown timing of all the regulatory, you know, what coins are going to be next, stake, you know, there's so many moving parts that are unknown. And we could have a headline that says, okay, well, we think that the regulations are going to be more permissive going forward. Okay, that's a great soundbite, but it still doesn't really specifically say which ones are going to be next, when are they going to happen, et cetera. So one of the things we liked when we were, you know, working with the CF benchmark team is like, okay, we value diversification. We think it's important that over time we're giving investors this solution to multiple coins, but we also understand that this is going to be an evolving process. Okay, we don't know when or how those coins are going to get added. We could look at the filings from the spot, other spot ETFs that have happened over the last, let's call it 6 months, but that still doesn't say which one's going to be next and to what extent. So one of the elegant aspects of the construction is that it actually is like, no,
we can have a market cap methodology, but then it's going to specifically have a regulatory construct on top of it, such that when that happens, that will rebalance. And then easy peasy will just naturally rebalance as well to track that index. So I just thought that in terms of like, hey, for advisors, investors, you want a broader exposure, we'll give you the broader exposure, but we're going to do it in such a way that it's going to evolve over time as the regulations evolve. We just think that was a very powerful message. I don't know, Roger, if there's anything on top of that you wanted to add.
Well, I think the thing that I would add on top of that is just the idea that the broad definition of digital assets and the types of things that are riding on blockchain rails, there's quite a potpourri of things going on there, ranging from, you know, things that have, you know, real utility like stable coins and things like Benji, tokenized money fund, real world assets, to things like meme tokens. And then the other things I think where we have a lot of opinion about is where there's tokenomics of an underlying network that reflect that the token holders will have value accrued to them in some way, shape, or form. You know, as this whole marketplace continues to mature and grow, you know, those constructs are important that, you know, we're involved, again, focusing on investors' needs and not fleecing investors in any way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. Of course. We've got so many brilliant strands or threads we can actually pursue. Before we go off on those amazing, like, thought exercises, any more basics about easy peasy that you want to tell us?
Well, I mean, it's pretty simplistic, right? I mean, we're trying to make things easy for customers to be able to access this. And that feels kind of kitschy, but it also is, you know, we see these crypto markets as capital markets. There's significant capital being raised. You're talking about a market size, you know, if we're talking about round numbers, depending on, you know, price action at any given time, about $3 trillion in the crypto markets. That puts it on par with some other fairly mature capital markets like high yield bonds. We used to call those junk bonds many, many years ago, but high yield debt. Now, you know, we have found places inside of investors' portfolios for deep capital markets. We think the future will continue to have infrastructure built around these crypto markets that will help begin to migrate the volatility down in certain parts. But as importantly, it's, you know, at $3 trillion compared to $100 trillion in the public markets between kind of public equity, public debt, you know, that means that, you know, people who are in the business of offering advice are going to increasingly be looking at things and saying, if I don't include this in my investor's portfolio, that is really an active decision not to be invested there. So it's, we know that advisors themselves, through our surveys, because we've been partners with advisors and wealth managers for literally decades, and we regularly ask our customers, you know, what are your needs? What are you doing? What's your future needs? We know the advisors themselves, and in many cases are investors in the asset class themselves and their personal accounts. But it has been kind of this more frozen regulatory environment, I think, in the United States that has caused their journey to be a little bit longer toward offering discretion. But we see that changing in the next period of time. And again, we're trying to anchor in to be good long-term partners with these customers and with the end savers. And so we just think this is a really great measured approach to begin that long-term journey of offering low-cost, diversified exposure in an index kind of construct toward clients in crypto.
Yeah, I really like that kind of take that you just said, because I think from an advisor standpoint, the name of the game is kind of measuring your bets, right? And they track active risk, you know, very closely. It's kind of how portfolio managers get scored, you know, on a quarterly, annual basis. And certainly if you are a regulated entity and you're following the global investment performance standards, you've got composite portfolios, you've got your strategic benchmarks. I just wanted to follow up and say, when do you think we're going to finally see these digital assets kind of be more integrated into model portfolios, model allocations, to where you get to that world that you were talking about? Or are you starting to kind of see that start to permeate a little bit with some of these more forward-thinking RIAs or smaller advisory shops?
It was funny if I kind of like could summarize the last, call it, I guess, 13, 14 months since the spot Bitcoin is, okay, let's watch this new thing. I don't, you know, oh my God, crypto, and maybe that sounds scary. And then all of a sudden, you know, the advisors started doing homework and they started looking at some of the risk metrics about the performance of Bitcoin and Ethereum compared to other asset classes, including, like, you know, growth and tech stocks. And all of a sudden, a lot of the metrics that any portfolio manager would look at in terms of Sharpe ratios and volatility and information ratios. Actually, this wasn't that out of line with other things that would go in a client portfolio. So then it became, oh, wow, okay, so what if I started adding a 1% or a 2% or a 3% allocation? And then the data looked pretty compelling. And then all of a sudden, the wait and see advisors in the early days all of a sudden started adding, you know, a little bit to their portfolios. And then the next wave advisors are watching those. And then all of a sudden, you know, some of the gatekeepers are interested as well. And then all of a sudden you start having a little bit of change of attitude towards what's the right percentage that would make some sense. So I would say even in the last year, that conversation has greatly evolved. And I know, you know, Roger and team, you guys have done a ton of research in terms of highlighting what an allocation to Bitcoin, Ethereum, and then the broader coins can do to an investor's portfolio. We'll just keep having those conversations and we're seeing more and more adopters.
Yeah, I think the pathway, quite frankly, is to get the index into the model portfolios. I mean, when you're looking at the assets themselves without including an index in the model portfolio, the outsized risk-adjusted returns means that you're always choosing the asset class and overweighting, and then you're sitting back and thinking, well, I mean, is that too much allocation? But when you start, you know, again, under the assumption that these are capital markets, that there's real capital market behavior that's going to happen. I mean, at $3 trillion, there's a lot of assets that aren't cash flowing, right? And so you're going to see robust lending markets develop. All of this is infrastructure coming forward. You're going to see, I think, more risk management tool sets, more options and futures listed to be able to help people have a number of different expressions, both positive as well as hedging risks, you know, to the downside. All of these are super important. You know, the SAB 21 going away means that you're going to have brands, institutional legacy brands of custodial trust come into the ecosystem as well. You know, all of this is going to help increase investors' appetite when they see those things coming about. But it's really the idea that it gets woven into the benchmarks that they're using to evaluate. And that's where I think you know, CF Benchmarks has a really great opportunity to be able to, you know, get into that part. Because when that happens, then yes, people begin to model. Franklin Templeton, our solutions team, has been offering these model portfolios here for a period of time as well, because we're obviously been offering this advice. And that's where I think we see the watershed, you know, events tip forward.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, when we looked at our investment committee process in my previous role, of course, you know, you have to get that strategic benchmark in the models so you can have kind of a measure. And certainly what you were bringing up as far as the statistics of where the global market portfolio currently stands with digital assets, just having that round $3 trillion number on the market cap is something to where it's starting to get to a point to where you can't ignore it. And if I were to just kind of like give my opinion a little bit of how I view the purpose of digital assets in a client's portfolio, it's you kind of have to bring this back to basic, you know, 101 principles of, you know, what's the goal of the client ultimately? You know, everyone's got some sort of financial goal, whether you're an institutional client or you're an individual client. And certainly, I think we look at the key attributes. David, you mentioned the risk-adjusted performance. We like to talk a lot about the return profiles of digital assets, of having that kind of option-like return asymmetry. However, they don't ever expire. You know, I mean, they technically some could go to zero, but when we talk about Bitcoin and Ether, they've never expired. They continue to kind of make higher highs and higher lows over the longer term. So it's kind of like a very advantageous risk return profile to add to a multi-asset portfolio that also adds diversification. You know, it has a very low correlation. So these are all the kind of ideal things that any asset allocator would look for as far as characteristics in an emerging asset class and be like, oh, it's probably too risky to own 0%. 0% is becoming the too risky number for advisors and allocators in digital assets. You know, I think we have to be measured, of course, and use traditional maybe risk attribution frameworks. But of course, there's opportunities to start adding another lever to the multi-asset framework. But yeah, that's just my quick opinion and I'll pass it over. I think Mark, you got a question?
Yeah, I think that was all great stuff. I'm looking to shift gears a little bit here and let's talk about the tokenized real world assets with you have Benji, your money market fund. And I actually went on the app store and looked just at the app you all have. And that UX is so pretty easy. Impressive. You know, it's not good. You're not really dealing with wallets and all the other stuff, yeah, which is huge.
Yeah.
But I've seen some tweets recently from Eric Balcunas just on broader ETF tokenization. And he kind of makes the point that ETFs are already pretty low cost to access. You can trade 24/7 now. And the UX is pretty simple with the brokerage account. So he doesn't think that there were any like real advantages. Could you kind of maybe debunk that or kind of tell us some of the advantages that maybe people aren't thinking about or aren't top of mind?
Just to clarify, because you mentioned you wanted to talk about real world assets. I mentioned Benji, but then I think you also said something about ETFs.
Yeah, I think the kind of link that I'm looking for there is for just between Benji and then moving out into broader tokenization of regular ETFs and everything. Yeah.
How about I'll start with just Benji and what.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
For customers and clients, you know, the idea that we've time tested things like money market funds through multiple credit cycles and economic cycles and have continued to bolster its kind of safety and security is something that was in my mindset when we started thinking about what could we use blockchain for. And that's really how quite frankly, all of our digital asset experience unfolded at Franklin Templeton. It's like, can we use blockchain for something meaningful inside of our business? And what we settled in on was we have a lot of records in our transfer agency system that are transaction records of clients subscribing, reinvesting dividends, redeeming, and we house those records forever, quite frankly. And it was just the idea, could public blockchain offer us some efficiencies inside of that regulatory responsibility? And lo and behold, yes, it did offer us efficiencies. But just as importantly was what it might offer the users of the money fund. By being on-chain, we can literally allow a user of Benji, as long as they're inside of our walled garden, because we are a security, we're inside of AML, KYC, walled gardens. But the idea that, you know, Roger could transfer to Ken Benji practically instantaneously, as fast as it can be recorded and a new block can be recorded on one of the chains. And we know, you know, there's lots of different latency depending on the chains you're on. We are on 8 different public blockchains currently with Benji. And we don't just have a US Benji, but we've launched 2 weeks ago a Luxembourg registered UCITS G Benji product as well. So we're mapping the globe in this construct. But this instantaneous transferability is a big, big unlock if you think about that. Previously, the construct would be Roger would redeem his money market fund, go to fiat, put that in his bank account, and then he would send via Zelle or Venmo to Ken into his bank account, and then he would have to go and put money back into the system. Well, we've reduced all that friction down to practically instantaneous settlement. The other thing, feature set, that it unlocked for us was the idea that, hey, if Roger transferred Ken, it's now here 9:40 a.m. on the West Coast of the United States, Roger transferred Benji to Ken, literally at 9:40 in 1 second, Ken would begin to earn the interest on the underlying asset. Now, that might not seem super interesting for, you know, my mom to send her, you know, holiday monies to her grandchildren, but institutionally, where there's literally trillions and trillions of dollars across planet Earth in these constructs, that has a lot of application for a number of interesting things. Everybody wants their interest and everybody wants to get it as soon as they possibly can. So again, pretty plain vanilla, boring US government fund becomes this thing that integrates into all sorts of money movement and the ability to be able to do that, you know, increasing, again, benefits to the users of the product primarily. So that can give you the background of thinking about tokenizing real world assets and what possibilities might unfold. David, as we look at ETFs and what role it plays inside of that, can you draw the line for us?
Yeah, it's something that we have looked, you know, I think, Roger, I don't know when we first had the conversation about tokenizing ETFs. From a regulatory perspective, they're still going to be treated under the ETF regulatory umbrella. So that's one of the reasons that as we think about tokenizing ETFs, but, you know, just in general, what's the problem that you're going to be solving for that doesn't exist today? So, you know, going back to sort of the big picture about how investors are using ETFs, okay, where are they using it within digital wallets or token? You know, and all of a sudden you can start saying, well, okay, I've got Benji. I'm in the Roger, the 8 blockchains, and I'm trying to decide where I want to. Oh, you know what? I actually want a little piece of that invested in equity markets, et cetera. Well, okay, now you can start getting into more tokenized forms within the digital wallet to say, okay, actually, I'm going to be using my Benji for these purposes. This, I actually might want to have some different return, and then you can kind of bring it back into traditional financial exposure. So that's, it's something that we're thinking about. But once again, that's, you know, Roger, that's all within sort of the bigger digital wallet payment elements. If you want to have like the traditional exposure to emerging markets or US equities or mid caps or small caps, et cetera.
We see a future state where ecosystem continues to migrate, you know, toward using these blockchain environments for a lot of the benefits that we're seeing as well. So that won't be a, you know, rapid turnaround to get to that place. It'll always be this and that, and another thing moving forward. But we used to have a person that, I'm showing my age here, team. When I first started at Franklin many, many years ago, there was a guy who used to walk around and help talk about something we called the Franklin Utilities Fund. And literally he would walk into a room of potential investors or advisors, and he would turn off the lights. And then he'd turn them on and he'd say, look, I just made you money. The Franklin Utilities money, and you turn it off and turn it back on. So some of these blockchain environments that we're using for Benji, these record keeping systems, I mean, these are places where we would like to offer advice off, would like to have easy peasy evolve into using some of these assets. And so it's kind of a similar construct. If you believe in the underlying ecosystem, then invest in the networks themselves. I mean, that's what, that was a big learning for us, is that the, you know, there was this real weird term, cryptocurrencies. What does it mean? Well, literally, these are kind of digital nation states. They don't have physical borders, you know, geographic physical borders, as we're all understand, but they have networking capacity across planet Earth to get one node to work and collaborate with another one. There's this medium of exchange that's now we call cryptocurrency. And they have different rules and different tokenomics. But the idea that you need to be able to, that you earn the cryptocurrency by bolstering the network, by operating nodes, or you have to pay for transactions recorded and using the cryptocurrencies. All of that was learnings that we came about several years ago. And so in the same sort of construct, if you like Benji and if you like the future state where like M2 moves faster, like fiat, and what are the rails that they go on? Well, then maybe you want to be an investor in the underlying networks themselves. And that's what we're trying to really, you know, drive with. Easy peasy, an easy way for you to invest in a low cost, diversified global, you know, network and protocol economy inside of your overall solution set.
Yeah, and Mark, just I guess maybe one more tension is not the right word, but it, you know, one of the challenges is that we've got ETFs, which you know, decades in the marketplace, and now you've got all these interesting new blockchains and cryptocurrencies and projects and smart contracts, et cetera. And so there's a weird, okay, we're doing all this innovation over here, and now let's go drop it back into the traditional financial instrument that all these investors, you know. So, you know, one of the things that we're thinking about is, okay, let's look at how the ETFs work and back to disruption and custody and creation redemption and on-exchange trading. A lot of the things that Roger talked about with Benji earlier in terms of the time to do things, well, a lot of that, you could argue, could be probably innovated over time regarding all the things that these digital assets can do. So it's sort of a multi-layered thinking to say, okay, maybe in the short term, it makes sense that as these projects and cryptocurrencies are evolving and they're getting regulatory approval and we keep putting them into the ETF construct, that's fine. But there's almost like a bigger, you know, future state of how all this stuff might work together that's kind of exciting.
Well, I was just going to say, back to the capital market thing, if getting into the ETF delivery mechanism expands the capital markets, then, you know, these particular networks will use that capital to continue to evolve. We're talking about innovation here, right? We're not talking about a whole bunch of things that are static. We've seen other projects, you know, come back to life, you know, over the past couple of years that might have been appeared to be like, you know, stale, or, you know, what's the real purpose of that particular project? Well, they have access to capital and they deploy that capital and they think about the new applications going forward. They can come back to life. This is innovation. We expect for it to continue to evolve over time. And as long as there's access to capital to pivot toward real consumer needs, real problems, real opportunities and challenges, we expect that just like any capital asset that will be deployed appropriately, hopefully.
One of the impressions I get actually talking to both of you, David and Roger, is it's just dawning on me basically that, you know, Franklin Templeton is a bit of a sleeping digital asset giant here, you know, by dint of sheer combined expertise. And we talked about allocations and maybe we sort of touched on your outlook or your perspective on the RIA outlook, you know, in terms of when that distribution might rise. But it strikes me that this is like powerful stuff for the advisor, because one thing that we often hear is that, you know, one friction or one apprehension, I think, from, you know, what we hear from our clients is that is the advisor space. How do you bridge that gap in terms of education, not only for the advisor themselves, but also for their clients, of course, and, you know, the final, you know, the end user. I'm getting the impression that it must be pretty powerful for, you know, you guys can obviously speak to this space. You've got real world experience and expertise. I'm talking about Franklin Templeton's track record in digital assets. How much of a pull is that for, I'd say, let's talk about advisors. Are they coming to you? And give us your impression on that. And also, if you don't mind, if you can elaborate in terms of the progress, in terms of getting them up to speed, in terms of not only their comfort, but their expertise and knowledge on the space. Because obviously that's beneficial for all of us going forward. Big question.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's a few parts there. You know, and it's funny, you know, you mentioned the word sleeping giant, and it's funny that there's so many layers to that sentence, because, you know, specifically to our now three digital asset ETF offerings, you know, there's Franklin Templeton at 75 plus years as an asset manager, you know, probably best known for active mutual funds. And then, oh, wait, you have a now $36 billion ETF business globally? I didn't realize that your ETF franchise was so big. Okay. Well, and then we can talk about our ETF offering and the inflows that we're getting and all the various ETF specific solutions, both across active management and indexing that we can provide for clients. Okay. So there's your ETF. Okay. And then you've got this digital asset team that, you know, to your point, whoa, how many years has this digital asset team been at Franklin Templeton? Tell us more about the history of Benji on Chain Fund and node validation and all the projects and investments that team is doing and the research and analysis about, hey, okay, let's teach you what is Bitcoin in terms of a store of value. What's Ethereum? What's our price targets for these? What's the actual like analytics? And hey, there's cash flows that we can actually look at and talk about for investors. So I think, you know, to summarize the advisor conversation is like, hey, here's Franklin Templeton. We have a lot of great things going on. A lot of, you know, I'm not even talking about alternatives and other things within the company, but specifically here. Hey, here's what we're doing within the ETF space. Here's what we're doing within the digital asset space. Here's why you should be trusting us for your allocation into this space. It's actually been a lot of fun over the last year and a half to you know, quite eye-opening to say, oh, wow, we didn't even realize that you had all these interesting things going on, both specifically ETFs and now the digital asset ETFs. And, you know, Roger, back to your team, the type of research and analytics and thought leadership about digital edge. Hey, let me help you understand the difference between Ethereum and Solana and Bitcoin and et cetera. It's really raising some eyebrows. I don't know, Roger, what you want to add from the digital part in particular?
Well, I think wealth managers also not only see this as, you know, again, as a additional, and I'm not sure we call it an emerging asset class anymore. It has fully unemerged in a pretty short amount of time. But, you know, advisors, there's a lot of wealth in America that sits in advisor in client portfolios for people who are, quite frankly, even older than myself. And yet the real growth and opportunity for wealth management platforms is actually reaching new customers and clients who are downstream. And, you know, my children are fully immersed in things in the digital world that I'm not fully immersed in. And the idea that these are, you know, future clients I think there's something inside of all these blockchain network-based opportunities that are going to also have us begin to think about things not in the traditional two-dimensional risk and return space. The world is not two-dimensional. The world is multidimensional. I think we're going to find ways to communicate about third and fourth dimensions of clients' needs, you know, preferences. Maybe they want to make impact somewhere. Maybe they want to do something. And we're going to realize there's actually a plane of solutions somewhere, and that these, you know, I think this technology unleashes the current wave. That, you know, the biggest product that actually has been most successful across the blockchains has been the stable coins. But again, those are, you know, those aren't necessarily something that we expect to accrue value over a long period of time, right? And so we'll see blockchain begin to apply to across a number of other type of assets and different type of ownership things, which will allow for mass customization of portfolios in new and interesting ways. So it's not, the journey just doesn't start with like these, you know, distributed ledger ecosystems off of which we're using for record keeping on Benji and then, you know, have opinions. But there's an exciting array of investment opportunities coming forward for clients and advisors to be able to not just, you know, solve problems for their existing clients, but for new generations of clients that they want to offer the same great advice for long periods of time.
That's great. Now, we are coming up to about an hour, and so I'm conscious of needing to let you guys get on with your days. So, Roger, maybe is there anything else that we've missed that you wanted to hear at all?
I don't think we've missed anything. I mean, I guess the one thing that I would emphasize too is not only have we built in blockchain, we are offering great advice about blockchain network protocol investment opportunities going forward. But we're also just part of networks. We made a decision many years ago to operate nodes on these networks. I mean, that is by definition, you know, if you own a cell phone tower, you're a part of the cell phone tower network. Mm. If you're operating nodes on these blockchains, you are part of the network. You know, we think that's an important part of us offering advice and bolstering the underlying ecosystem that we do that. So there's really a broad grouping of activities that, yes, I mean, you're calling us a sleeping giant. We're really not, I don't think we're really sleeping, you know, no, as much as your thing. But yes, this idea that as a TradFi player that has been pretty traditional in their product offerings, we're listening to customers and clients globally, and we're building toward those opportunities and ends. So I think that would be the last thing I'd emphasize, not just how we build in blockchain, offering advice about protocol blockchain network investment opportunities, but also you can think of us as being part of the network as well.
I think that the fact that we've got, for those that are listening, you know, you might not be able to see the video recording of this, but there's Ben Franklin with laser eyes behind Roger's head, which certainly gives you an idea of how non-sleepy this TradFi firm is. But no, I just want to thank you all for coming on the show. And maybe I think one way to just kind of wrap up is to, because this has been a really fun conversation, but you kind of just wrap up here and think about what's next. And for Roger, I want to ask you, you know, for Benji, you know, maybe take us back to, you know, why did it start with tokenizing, you know, money market securities, and what's next? And for David, you know, what's next on the ETF side as far as what you're seeing around the corner? Certainly, we've seen appetite for option strategies and those kind of more defined outcomes, stuff that can be more tailor-made. But I just want to get both of your opinions on these two different avenues of where you're working on. And I'll start with you, Roger.
I mean, look, we recognized and went through a real painful process of developing with the SEC, arrived at a place where all the feature sets that we're looking for, there's a couple other permissions we like. We think that as entities like Kraken, for example, begin to have permissions to be able to operate as broker dealer in the securities business, you know, we'd like to be able to engage with you as a third party distributor, a Benji. You know, those are type of things that are still kind of in the future space. But literally what's happened is as we've mapped the globe in a couple of different Benji constructs, and not only in public funds, but you'll see us also in a private money fund construct. I think some of the use cases for Benji isn't just, you know, the interesting thing, as we were talking about Roger sending Ken Benji, but the idea that there are inside of even the crypto markets, there's massive volume in derivative trading that's happening on the exchanges, you know, leveraged positions or protected positions. And the idea that a lot of that is currently collateralized by stable coins, which don't offer any yield or income. We are active in penetrating into the collateral markets, both in the crypto native businesses and then future TradFi businesses where the volume is even, you know, 33 times what you see in the crypto markets as good collateral. Again, as the regulators approve those constructs going forward, understanding that these ecosystems offer for a new and improved collateral process, that's something that's sitting right in front of us over the next year. We expect to be a large and substantial player inside of those type of opportunities. And then really where you know, creative minds can come together to solve other, you know, problems and you know, decrease friction between actors. I mean, you know, we see those opportunities also in the FX markets, also in the, quite frankly, trade finance business models going forward. So, and then simultaneously, we have opportunities sitting in front of, you know, kind of the people who are embedded in payments ecosystems, because again, they want to be able to offer optionality to pay in a number of different things, whether it's, you know, fiat or whether it's in stable coins or whether it's in tokenized money funds, you know, giving choice to their investors. So there's a lot of really ripe things. I would not have said that those things, those markets, you know, 2.5 years ago would have existed in the way. And I think it also just emphasizes how you have to be doing R&D. You have to have a spirit of R&D activity and what might be possible. There's another sign I have back here. Why not us? Just continue to kind of take wisdom of being across markets and marrying that with innovation has been super powerful for us.
You know, what's interesting about the ecosystem from an ETF lens is it's sort of, you know, the elegance of easy peasy is it's going to give you this broad exposure, except then we get asked, well, okay, your broad exposure only has two coins right now. It's only Bitcoin and Ethereum. So it's sort of a strange, you know, point in time where if I think about traditional indexing, right, think about like an equity index where you have thousands of US equities and then you can slice them into 500 or 1,000 or 2,000 across the cap spectrum. And here we're sort of like doing it on the go. And so, you know, one of the things that's going to be fun over time is hopefully as new coins are, you know, becoming regulated and they fit the criteria of the index construction. Okay, so yes, over time, those will still, new ones regulated, it gets added to the index. But you can imagine a world down the line where the number of coins of cryptocurrency should be greater than the ones that are in the index, because that's how it's supposed to work. And so that's where, you know, it's kind of exciting to be here in, you know, really phase one where, you know, why own this? Well, okay, yeah, right now you're going to own two. Eventually you're going to own more, but then over time there's going to be differentiation. There's going to be, you know, different index rules. There's going to be active management. So it's kind of exciting to be here at the beginning of almost creating the universe that gets into the index while at the same time, you know, the regulations are coming in. So anyway, it's an exciting time.
I just wanted to, you know, say thanks for coming out today, guys, and kind of talking about the importance of not just indexing, but it was also great to hear about your experience building on chain and what that could potentially unlock for capital markets going forward.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to clarify, obviously, Franklin Templeton is not asleep in any sense, but, you know, the perception, I suppose, maybe the crypto native perception, I'd say a lot of our crypto native viewers and listeners don't know the history of Franklin Templeton. You know, we're talking about the, you know, Benji and even, you know, just the now three crypto asset ETFs, you know, that probably struggle to actually mention this if you ask them outright. So in that sense, it's the perception. There's nothing sleepy about.
They think we're probably pretty sleepy. This is probably the sleepiest crypto podcast. You know, we're not talking about any meme coins on here. So
exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. It's all a relative game, right? But yeah. No, thank you guys. Of course.
We're extremely grateful.
On.
Roger Baston and David Mann from Franklin Templeton. Thanks a lot for joining us. We're really grateful.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
So Roger Baston and David Mann from Franklin Templeton, after the launch of their Franklin Crypto Index ETF, and that was a really wonderful conversation. If you liked it, you'd like to listen to other podcasts, just navigate to wherever you catch your podcasts. We have several episodes up there now. CFBenchmarks.com is where you need to go for our other content. And we'll see you again for another episode of CFB Talks Digital Assets. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to CFB Talks Digital Assets. This recording is for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice.
This recording is not intended to persuade or incite you to buy or sell any financial products noted within, including but not limited to exchange-traded funds, mutual funds, equities, other instruments that reference any index provided by CF Benchmarks Limited, or crypto assets. Any commentary, interviews, and discussions are opinions only and should not be considered a personalized recommendation. Please contact your financial advisor or professional before making an investment decision. Note, some of the underlying instruments cited within this recording may be restricted to certain customer categories in certain jurisdictions.